Welcome to Career Tools. This week, briefing technical topics to non-technical audiences, part two. The questions this cast answers are, how do I dumb down technical topics for non-technical audiences? Why do non-technical audiences need technical briefings? And what do I get out of briefing non-technical audiences?
Silicon Valley Palo Alto Manager Tools is headed your way in just under a month. March 12th, we'll host our flagship event, the Effective Manager Conference. March 13th is our Career Tools Effective Communicator event. Both are open to anyone who would like to register and sign up online and increase your professional skill set. March 12th and 13th in Palo Alto. You can sign up at manager-tools.com/training.
So last week, Amanda, we talked a lot about the audience and about what the content should be. And now we're going to talk about making it easy for the audience to understand and rehearsing to make sure that we give a good presentation.
Now we're going to talk about making it easy to understand. And how do you do that? First, use friendly words. With a non-technical audience, it would be best to avoid acronyms or even jargon. Some of that technical jargon is hard to understand too for those non-technical audiences. Technical terms such as central processing unit or tunnel formwork have no more meaning to them than the abbreviations CPU or TFW. So the words that you use will not be accurate to the level that you're used to. And that's okay. Remember, when you're communicating to a non-technical audience, they do not require the same level of that technical specificity that you and your peers do. So it's okay to not use acronyms or the jargon to kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down because that's not it, but use more basic language so they can understand it.
Yeah, the thing is with the words, even if you say the words out loud, if you say central processing unit and it's a non-technical audience who don't, they still don't know. They can't put into context what those words are. It's three random words. It's no more helpful to them than the acronym. You could have said CPU because that's three random letters. It still doesn't mean anything to them, or it means something to them and it's completely different than what it means to you because those three random letters mean something different in their world. So if you said Apple slide tree, that's what CPU means. It's a central processing unit means to them because they've got no context in which to put it. And so by saying the words in the whole, you're not helping them. It's not helpful. And so what you need to do instead is give them something that they can put into context. And that usually means using words or descriptions or analogies for things which are everyday, which you know that everybody will understand.
Yeah. And some examples of that are for CPU or GPU, you can refer to them as the brain of the computer. LLM is large language model. You can just say the model. Front end as the part you see or the website. When talking about websites, people say the front end or the back end. Just say, well, the front end is the part that you see.
Yeah. And strictly speaking, a lot of people use the website for a lot of things which aren't the website, but just go with it. It's fine. If their understanding is the website does X, Y, and Z, and you know that it's the API or it's the database behind it or it's whatever, there's a whole bunch of stuff behind the website and the website is literally just the skin on the front. Don't worry about it. Let them use the website if that's how they can understand what you're talking about. It drives me nuts, but I also understand that that's how people understand it.
On the reverse side, I'm the person that says the website and it's all the same thing. The front end or the back end, the inner workings or what I see, to me, it's all the website. So I apologize, Wendy, because I am that person to you. Like, no, it's fine. You talk about what you need to. I understand that it's the website. And tell me whatever else you need to, because that's as far as my poor little brain can comprehend.
What's funny about it is that I am completely untechnical about accounting things. And I know I drive Liz mad when I say, so it's like my checking account, right? And she has this look on her face, which is, no, it's nothing like your checking account, Wendy. And then she sort of says, well, yes, which is like, no, but sort of, which is like, no, it's not the website, but sort of.
Yeah, so no, that's not how money works, Wendy, but sort of. Yeah, no.
It's, everybody has their realm in which they understand things and their realm in which they don't.
I'm apparently still trying to find mine because Liz also has to have those conversations with me. She's like, no, that's not exactly. I was like, it's fine. So I appreciate all you experts that can speak non-technical because it helps me out. So Wendy said API. So just so everyone knows what that is, application programming interface. This is the communication program or the translator, right? That's how things get translated. And then BI would be business intelligence or a souped up version of Excel. Yeah. Who doesn't like a souped up version of something? So I like that one. That's a fun one.
Yeah. You don't need to oversimplify it. You don't need to make it into blocks, you know, like children's blocks, but be prepared to do that if it helps with somebody's understanding. The idea of these briefings is that people come out of it understanding what you're doing. And if what you have to do in order to help them understand is to go to a level that you wouldn't normally go to, then be willing to do that in support of their understanding.
Because they really will appreciate it. Nobody likes to feel like they've sat in a meeting and don't understand anything for an hour.
No.
Or if they ask for clarification and then they still don't understand it, like that's hard. But if you are able to make that connection for them, they're going to leave that meeting and be like, man, they are good.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. Like, and they are going to go forth and be more excited about what you're probably excited about.
The next one is use visuals. So images, diagrams, flowcharts often communicate more effectively than more text. A picture is truly worth 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
The key with visuals is simplicity. For instance, in depicting a yes-no logic gate, don't overload it with excessive details. Instead of showing like all 87 parameters in the decision process, you might simply write, ask questions, yes-no, just to represent the fact that there's a question there or there's some questions there. If you're going to use a diagram to simplify things, you don't then want to load it with complexity and make it less simple again. There's some diagrams out there for, I think there's one for Agile that's so complicated. There's barely any space on the page between the lines of things that are happening on the diagram. And it's like, well, why did you bother making a diagram? Because it doesn't explain anything. So if you are going to make a diagram, just make it sure that it's really simple and it's actually explaining something.
Yeah. You don't want that diagram that people look at and you're like, nope, that looks too complicated for me to even try to visualize. So they just shut it down. So keep that in mind too. And you're going to want to use analogies and relatable examples. The reason we use terms like mouse and desktop, files and folders when we're talking about computing is that these are familiar concepts with the technologies that were introduced. Now, the files and the folders, even though the icons look like that on your computer, that's not what they really look like. But to us simple folks that needed to figure out what the computer was trying to do, be like, oh, I know, I can save it to a folder, just like I used to take my piece of paper and put it in a folder. It's glorious. So we know that it's not going to be the exact same, but if you can find a way to make that connection, do it. The more mundane your analogies are, the better.
So a tech stack can be likened to a hamburger with each layer representing a different technology. A large language model can be compared to a person who's read lots of books, but doesn't necessarily understand any of them. A desktop widget could be described as a small window showing information stored elsewhere. And what's funny about that is it originally said a widget, and I put it in the show notes and I sent them to Mark, and he said, I don't understand that. And I said, well, it's a window to information from somewhere else. And he said, well, where do you get them? I said, well, you have them on your phone, or sometimes you can put them on your desktop now. And he said, oh, you mean not like as in a widget that production makes, because that's what widgets used to be. And I said, no, like a computer widget. So when you are making analogies, make sure that your audience knows what, and that's why they have to be mundane. They have to be something that everybody knows, that everybody uses. And that's why hamburgers and sandwiches and making a cup of tea or driving, that's why those work, because they're universal and everybody knows them. And don't assume that desktop widgets are something that everybody uses, because apparently they don't. Or even if they do, they don't know that's what they're called.
Yeah. Thanks for explaining that, Wendy. I don't know either. I'm learning so much about myself today. Now, they don't have to be technically accurate to work. These analogies, they just have to be that close enough to facilitate that understanding. So make sure that the mundane, that they're just familiar, something that everyone can relate to. And the simpler, the better.
Right? Yeah.
Even though you might understand it, try to make it simple.
They have to hold it in their mind's eye. They have to hold it in their brain while you explain something else. So it has to be something easy for them. And Richard Feynman, apparently, I looked up this quote, but it's variously attributed and argued about. If you can't explain it simply, then you don't understand it well enough. I don't know whether he said it or not, but it seems to be very well agreed that if you can't explain something simply, then it's a problem with your understanding. You need to continue to explain it until you can explain it simply, because it's a sign of the depth of your understanding.
Yeah.
The world moves faster than ever, and your people move in and out of their roles faster than ever as well. Making the right hiring decision is critical, yet you have even more of them to make and less time to make them. The newly revamped Video Effective Hiring Manager course will take you from vacancy to offer, helping you to find candidates who will stay. It's not just about filling the positions. It's about finding the perfect match for your team to ensure long-term success. Start building your dream team today. Visit us online at manager-tools.com/products.
Next, we're going to talk about rehearse, right? Rehearse your presentation. It's not a very secret to giving a good presentation is that you should actually practice it beforehand or go through it. The more rehearsal that you can do, the better you will present. If possible, you want to rehearse with someone from that target audience, or at least someone who can represent them. That can give you the insight to your content to know if it's actually going to reach that audience. All of those things that you've asked yourself that we've talked about today, your content, does your presentation, is it going to hit the mark? So having someone that can give you that feedback beforehand is great.
And the questions they ask, you can then answer in your presentation and you won't be asked on the day.
Yeah, or if you can't slide it in, what I really like to do is have those questions in the back of my mind to basically ask myself. Just to clarify some things, I'm like, oh, it didn't fit on the slide, but I know someone's thinking this. Mm-hmm. And it also shows that you have a depth of knowledge about your information and that you're focused on the audience when you can relate it back to them, because not everyone's going to ask those questions. People don't like to raise their hand or interject during a presentation. So having those like prepared questions able to answer, is that also makes for a really good presentation. And I know Wendy has taught me a lot about this. Leveraging AI for rehearsal can also be beneficial. Oh, yes, you can send it in and they ChatGPT can help you. It's amazing. I'm slow to the party, everyone, but Wendy's showing me the ways. You can ask it to summarize your presentation and then it can summarize the summary. And then you really get that concentrated information. So in a very short order, you can know if you're hitting that target audience. This helps make sure that your overall message, the essence that you're presenting to, removes the unnecessary technical details. So the first, second, maybe third time you write, you'll almost certainly include too much technical detail. It's because that's what you're interested in, right? It's your expertise. You want to include this information that you know. But remember, the presentation is about the audience. So leveraging AI can help you really concentrate and make sure that you're not using too much of that high-level technical information.
And we talked about this a little. Practicing your presentation with someone who mirrors your audience's profile or even someone who's completely unfamiliar with your topic is most helpful if you ask them to tell you when they don't understand something. Mm. If you're practicing with someone, some people won't interrupt you because they think you're practicing and you want to get through it. And some people will give you feedback on things that you didn't want feedback on. Like they'll tell you, oh, you say this word funny. You're like, okay, I say that word funny, but what I really wanted to know was this. So if you prompt them at the beginning, say, okay, these are the three things I want you to look for. And one of the mm-hmm. things I want you to look for is, when don't you understand what I'm the idea that I'm presenting? Or when doesn't this stuff make sense? That will help you, because when you're new at presenting or when you're inexperienced, the most challenging thing to deal with is being interrupted and asked a question, because it interrupts mm-hmm. your flow and you have to manipulate your content in your head to answer the question, and then you have to get back into flow. And so it's really hard to be asked a question. And so being able to anticipate them in advance or refining your presentation to clarify them beforehand can significantly reduce interruptions, or you can do what Amanda does and just preempt them. And so if you can do this, that you're proactively streamlining the presentation, and it makes it so much easier for you as a presenter, because you know you're controlling what is going to happen. You're taking some of the chaos out of it.
Yeah.
You know, you're controlling what is happening in the room more.
Yeah. It also can give you some insight to your timing of it.
Oh, of course.
Right. You might be rehearsing one way, just to yourself, going through things pretty quickly, but not taking into account where people might ask the questions or where you will have to slow down and maybe explain things a little bit different. So having another person there to interject, right? That adds time to any presentation. If you have a hard stop at 60 minutes and your presentation takes 55 minutes and you haven't accounted for all those questions or that sometimes off-topic interjections that get added in there, that's also a really important thing to consider, because you don't want to only get through 70% of your presentation because of a hard stop.
Especially so that rehearsal. If all the value to your mind is in that last 30%.
Yeah, because that's normally like, oh, the whole reason that we're here today is to talk about this, and I'm going to have to really rush through it because we don't have a whole lot of time, because I wasn't anticipating all the questions, or I had to explain things two or three different ways because I didn't anticipate what my audience would want.
That would suck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Effectively presenting complex technical subjects to non-technical audiences is an art that requires empathy, clarity, and some practice. But mastering the skill is invaluable because it demonstrates your ability to communicate horizontally and vertically within the organization, enhancing your career prospects. In the short term, it equips your colleagues with a better understanding of the technology you work with, enabling them to work more effectively with you. And in the longer term, it broadens your professional network, allowing you to develop the relationships and a reputation for both your technical expertise and your adeptness at presenting. Taking on this role, often with little competition, because nobody else wants to do it, offers substantial benefits for your career, and it's only a little bit of extra effort. So it's well worth doing.
Well worth it.
Thanks, Amanda.
All right, thanks, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.